Hooray!
Yay!
Sup, Pete?
Sorry, I was like staring at you. I always get hit record stage frags. I'm like,
like we couldn't cut any and all of it out.
Exactly. I'm just like, because it's like so much pressure to start like talking.
I know. Oh my god. Can you guys give us like 5 more minutes? Just like, just yeah. Skip 5 minutes ahead. I promise. It's just shut up.
There was a time when I used to like enter in on us talking, which I think I did recently. But at some point, we do have to start addressing the
people.
Audience. You know,
hi.
People. Hello, people. Hello. We know you're there. You're ever present in our lives. Brittany and I had such a fluid conversation about Pamela Smart and her atrocities. And then I get on this mic and hit record and I lose every brain cell I had left.
I have really bad performance anxiety. If you've noticed I'm making really weird faces, there is a book on my bookshelf that I am 99.9% sure I've read. Couldn't tell you one detail about it. And it's driving me crazy because now I'm going through like each book on my bookshelf and I'm like, I can tell you like one thing about it. Even a few of the books I know I haven't finished, I could tell you like a character name or like a little something about it. And I'm like,
so is that the same as... This happens to me a lot with movies. Like, sometimes I'll be like, oh, no, I've seen that movie. I don't feel like watching it again. But then I sit there and I think about it. I'm like, but I can't remember what happened. It's like, I know what happened, but then when I think about it, I really don't. It's weird. Like, I'll be like, no, I know I've seen that movie and I know what happened. But then when I think, I'm like, wait, what happened then? Tell yourself what happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like that in that I'm like, I know I read it.
And it's like, you don't want to read it again because you've already read it, but you can't tell yourself anything about it.
I couldn't tell you a character name.
Like, you know The Family Stone, that movie?
Yes. Never watched it.
Okay, so I watched it back when it came out, like not in theaters or anything, but, and I remember liking it, but also thinking it was weird and whatever, because like everyone, it's just weird. But so then this past Christmas it was on. So first I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch The Family Stone. But then I'm like watching it and I was like, wait, I don't fucking remember one single part of this movie.
Well, I think you probably just had the general impression of kind of liking it, but not like enough that you wanted to watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. I knew bits and pieces. Like, I know that Claire Danes shows up because she's
Sarah
Jessica Parker.
Didn't she like fall off her bus?
She did. That wasn't like... She was, like, being beautiful and quirky. So she was, like, getting off the bus. And Dermot Mulroney, who was dating Sarah Jessica Parker, and everyone, she was fucking horrible. And I forgot that part. I remember feeling bad for her and being like, this family's sick. And then, like, now when I rewatch it, I'm like, wait, she's awful. They have every right to hate her. But she called her sister, Claire Danes, weird casting. They're like, yes, two people who look very related. But she was like, gotta get over here and, like, be in my corner. And so then Claire Danes is getting off the bus and Dermot Mulroney's like, oh my god, she's so beautiful. And then she falls on her face getting off the bus.
That was like very like early aughts. They're like, she's so beautiful, but she falls. Oh well. I think that was like one of Bella's defining characteristics in like Twilight. They're like, look at this beautiful girl. She falls and likes vampires. She's really weird.
Insecure about herself, not like other girls her age.
I love whenever that time that I think Anna Kendrick was like watching Twilight and someone's like, you're in Twilight. She's like, what? And then her scenes popped up and she was like, holy shit, I totally forgot I was in Twilight.
Every time she's in something, I'm like, even if it's not supposed to be, this is about to be hilarious.
I know, everyone like shits on A Simple Lie or whatever that movie is. I like that movie.
That movie's... Wait, who shits on that movie? That movie made me believe in Blake Lively as an actress.
Me too. I had a great time.
Yeah.
I thought I read something somewhere. Sorry, I have discovered that my Laneige lip mask was on my desk. And now I'm like, ooh, my lips are going to be so soft by the end of this recording.
They're going to be as soft as a 12-year-old Sephora girl's naturally soft lips. Because she's 12. Because
she's 12 and doesn't need any products.
Thank you for clarifying. I realized how creepy I sounded.
Well, we were also just like talking about like people our age with committing crimes.
Yeah.
With 12-year-olds. And we were like, that's disgusting.
I don't know if that was that. I don't think that part wasn't on recording. So people.
We were talking about that. We're not weird.
We are anti 12-year-olds in relationships with adults.
I'm kind of anti-12-year-olds.
Oh, I'm anti-12-year-olds.
Across the board. Paige, imagine if some idiot made like a 5-star hotel for children and then had some sort of weird grand party to kick off this hotel.
That would be a strange and creepy idea. And one would think that if there were to be an episode of Law and Order SVU about it, that the theme of a child-friendly, child-based, for-children hotel, you would think that that would be the main problem because it sounds like a problem. But it's not, actually. No.
I actually don't even understand why it had to be that way for the plot. Like, you couldn't just bring your children to a normal 5-star hotel.
I guess always so they could say the line, and I wrote it down. Safe as your mother's arms. Is that what your brochure said?
I was like, that's what was in the brochure, and you went?
Yeah, I said the same thing. I'm like, but if I read that, if I opened a hotel brochure, first of all, I mean, it's in 2000. If I opened a hotel brochure, and one of the things that it said was as safe as your mother's arms, I'd be like, you know what? I feel like I need to report this to someone. This feels like it might be a trafficking front.
I mean, even I'm trying to think, there's not a single company, unless it was called Your Mother's Arms, even then, if they were like, as safe as your mother's arms, I'd be like, are you gonna touch me?
When I arrive? Because, like, now I'm thinking, I'm like, in what? I know it's a phrase, but I'm like, in what context would we even? I'd be, like, creeped out in any context. Like, this is a, like, this shawl is as safe as your mother's arms. I'm like,
Don't touch me.
Ugh.
And I love my mother and her arms, but.
Exactly.
Also, it's not nothing you do. Don't bring my mother into this.
Good point. Like, you don't know my mother? Why are you bringing her up in public like this in a brochure, no less? Like. Mm. What if I... Also, they're not thinking about the population of people who don't have mothers.
Or have horrible mothers, where safe as your mother's arms is like...
Do you mean the mother who dropped me? That's the mother you're speaking of?
The mother from that episode who we were like, maybe you should investigate her because she makes her daughter take her clothes off when she gets home from school. Her mother? The mother from Holes? She was a good mom in Holes, but not in this episode.
I forgot that was the mom from Holt. All right, well, this is Elite Squad Pod, episode 33, and we are going to be recapping today Law & Order SVU, season 2, episode 8, Taken. It aired December 15th, 2000, and was directed by...
Michael Fields. And that's the only notes I've got for you today.
There you go. You had to get it in there, didn't you, Brittany? I had to get it in. No, I'm kidding. She's like, this is my part. Also, we're in September again. I believe last episode we were in October. I think we got out of September, but now we are back in September. I'm going to have to double check, but 90% sure we had left September at one point.
Yeah, a little confusing, but that's okay. That's okay.
It's not, listen. The masterpiece that is the show is not based in time or space.
And just a reminder, we are trying this new thing where last episode I did the notes and Paige chimed in. And this time, that's why I didn't give you guys the original air date. I didn't take no notes. Well, I took a few notes on who the director was. But besides that, no notes. No notes, Porter.
She did that knowing that I would not have done it.
Well, I started to take notes and then was like, just kidding.
It is nice to not have to, like, because you're like, oh, I can just kind of enjoy the episode like a viewer.
Like I used to.
We, like, want to do this. We continue to do it. It's year two of doing it. And we're like, it's just so hard and annoying. So dun-dun, opening scene. We enter in on Thorpe Palace, which is a hotel. They did call it Thorpe Palace, though.
That's a lot of Thorpe Palace.
Thorpe Palace.
Don't love it.
We enter in on hundreds of people who are partying in this massive, I called it a ballroom area because that's what it looks like, but it is right next to the hotel lobby and elevators.
It's a weird setup.
Very weird. And it's like multiple floors. It looks more like a mall. Like, you know how, you know the mall in First Kid, everybody? It looks like that, frankly, but it's a fucking hotel. So everyone's partying. Everyone's dressed to the nines. Kind of like an old school, like, party, like, suits. Ladies have dresses. The kids are all dressed up. There's a swing band playing. Kids are running around everywhere laughing. There's so many kids. Food. Piles of burgers. Piles of hot dogs. I was sitting there, and I was like, I wish I was in that particular space. Not really everywhere else, but I want to be where the swing music is and the hot dogs. It was like a Nora Ephron movie. It looked like a party where Sally and Harry would be.
Yes.
Like, for New Year's. Right? Like, it looked like that party.
Except, like, the clown and the person dancing in the chicken costume?
There was a lot of strange, and I'll just say this now because it's a little later in my notes, but there's a lot of literal characters there. Like, there was a giant pink bear. And when I say this to you, I mean that it was a man in a costume that was, like, 10 feet tall, and it was a pink bear. Terrifying.
Yeah, no. Didn't love it. And also the kids are, like, running around with the balloons, and, like, it's like a black tie party, but in the middle of the day.
Yeah, and it's very, and, like, the swing, it's, like, the same song. Like, yeah, we, like, come back. Yeah, and, like, we cut away, like, several times and come back, and there's, it's the same song.
It's still the same song.
It's the one song the band was played to play. They were like, they blew the entire budget on the decorations and the food, the pile of hot dogs, and they're like, you can only play one song. We only have budget for one song. This big to-do is because it's the Hotel Thorpe Palace's grand opening. So a group of people take to the stage in the ballroom area and or lobby. And the main guy, the main boy talking up there is Alan Thorpe, the owner. So he gives a speech. And the speech is kind of that no one believed that Alan Thorpe could do it again. He's like, but I did. Alan Thorpe opened, I think he said, the world's only Manhattan's first child-friendly hotel. And which is why there's thousands of fucking kids there and hot dogs and hamburgers. And the camera cuts to, when he says that, the camera cuts to these two little boys holding balloons. And they're just punching the balloons.
It just, like, looks so unappealing. And he's just up there, like, literally just, like, patting himself on the back. They said it couldn't be done. Said I could now do myself again.
They were like, Alan Thorpe can't do this again. And they even, like, gave us his name, which I know you have to name character. I feel like sometimes people are like, Paige, why don't you expect them to name characters? I'm always like, they gave this guy a name. But it's because we never see these people ever again. And so... Alan Thorpe. So after, and he's kind of hot actually, so I will be referring to him as Daddy Thorpe for the rest of
Silver Fox Thorpe.
So after Silver Fox Thorpe gets done congratulating himself, the party and the music resumes. Yes, it's the same song. When Harry met Sally. So we see as the camera slowly pans over to the elevators right next to the band, and the elevator doors open. So this girl stumbles out, and she is a young girl. Her dress is ripped, and her face is all bruised. So she literally does that thing where she, like, grabs the side and, like, stumbles out as if someone has shoved her. So as she falls out of the elevator, a man standing right there catches her. And so he's leading her away. You know, she's, like, kind of leaning on him, and she goes, help me, I was raped. And she says it right to him. So then he leads her kind of over to the left, I guess. And there's another group of, I guess, security guards waiting there. And they take her. No one else notices. He looks behind him and kind of looks back at the party. And then fades out. Intro. So, dun-dun. Still the party.
Still the same fucking song.
Same song. These guys either know one song or they literally were paid 7 hours to play one swing song. This is where I mentioned the person in the bear costume. It was scary. He's, like, hovering over the children. I'm like, ugh. So BNS, I think they exit the elevators. So I don't know if the lobby is on a different floor or maybe I just missed it. But they walk in the room. Winston, we learn his name later, but this person named Winston is about to walk by them. He's the head of security. Again, we find out later. They literally do not tell us who this is for, like, 10 minutes.
Which is very hard for note-taking.
So hard for note-taking. This guy's name is Winston. He is head of security. We didn't know that for another 15 minutes, but this is who he is. So he's walking by, and Stabler grabs him and goes, you mind filling us in? And Winston goes, you mind smiling? And there's a photographer standing right there.
Like, flash bulbs are going off.
Yeah, and he's like, no need to alarm the guests. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I'm like, two things can be true. Because I was like, what? Someone was raped? But then I'm also like, it's true. We don't need to alarm the cats. And there's a lot of children here.
Yes. I don't know.
So Winston leads BNS into like an officer conference room, and a man is in there giving it to the rest of the hotel staff who are in there. He's just like kind of yelling. He's like, how could you let this happen? He says, is that what you meant in your brochure when you said safe as your mother's arms?
It really said that in the brochure. Like,
yeah, as previously discussed, why would you go?
I mean, I guess I just expect safety from a hotel. I would be super concerned if I opened up a brochure and it was like, and we're super safe. I'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, you're right. It's the doubling down. You're right.
And we're a super safe hotel. I'd be like,
don't worry at all.
Fine.
It's fine. Super safe hotel. Not at all rapey. Like, you're right. It's kind of like, because like, you're right. A motel you drive to and you're like, it's very possible I could get murdered here.
Yeah. And if they were like, hey, just so you know, we're in a safe area. I'd be like, thank you. You know where my mind was going. If I go to a fucking 5-star hotel and they're like, and we're soup safe, I'd be like,
safe as your mother's aren't. Hey, put that in the brochure. That's good.
Put it in there.
It's so child friendly that they let children write their brochures. They were like, we're going to hire some interns and they're 5. And this is what they wrote. Safe as your mother's arms. I love when kids have eroticism. Arms. They can't say the R.
Same kid is like, oh, and that guy over there is sweetness. And we're like, damn it, we said a child would never come up with that.
Where was I even at?
Bo Miller.
Okay, yeah, no reason to alarm. Yeah, giving it to the gap. So the man yelling and really giving it to the staff is Bo Miller. And he is the brother of the rape victim. So Benson interrupts as he's yelling about the mother's arms and the promises that were failed this day. And she goes, what happened? So Bo kind of does like a little sidestep. He goes, my sister, sidestep, Siobhan. And he, like, motions gently over to the couch.
Like he's in a musical, like, and her name is Siobhan.
You noticed it too. Okay, I'm not crazy.
He was no, like, I thought it was super weird.
It was so weird. He goes, my sister, sidestep, arm out, Siobhan. Anakita. Evita.
And she is like on the couch with like her hands like pressed to her forehead with a blanket. She's like
wrapped in a blanket. I'm sick. Literally. And then Benson comes and kneels down next to her. And she's like he's kind of like when you're afraid of like a monster. And you're like, I gotta make sure my head is mostly covered by the cover so the monster doesn't get me. Okay, you can probably tell by the way we're treating this already that you don't have much to worry about here today.
It's okay to give it to Siobhan a little bit.
So Stabler scolds Winston, again, head of security, for the lack of police presence or lack of BNS on the scene and accuses him of obstruction, which I did think was a little much. I was like, okay.
You're here. You're dealing with it.
They kind of make this guy Winston out to be like, he's kind of supposed to be like a crotchety bad guy, but he's just doing his job. Like, they just are phrasing it weird. Like, he's like, we called you immediately. Sex crimes, yes. And they're like, yeah, but you didn't call the other police that would have had to call us eventually. And he didn't call us EMS.
And you didn't have a ton of, like, cars outside with their sirens on super loud.
Oh, yeah, Stabler actually says that. He goes, yeah, no flashing blue and lights, no sirens, people are still dancing. You mean the other people who didn't get assaulted, who aren't allowed to dance, apparently?
Let them dance, Stabler.
Oh, God, let them dance. Let the children dance. So then a guy from the corner, sorry, so this guy pops out of the corner. And he says that no one at Thorpe Hotel knowingly obstructed justice. And Stabler interrupts and goes, a lawyer? You got a lawyer here before EMS? And I'm like, LOL, that is kind of funny.
That is shady. And we'll give you that one.
Dick move. So Benson's talking to Siobhan. She's 17. And we learn this later, but she's visiting New York with her older brother, Bo, the angry guy from a second ago, his wife, Patricia, and her niece, their daughter, Tara. And they're all from North Carolina. So Siobhan in particular has a thick accent, and then no one else does. Actually, no, Patricia. The girls have the thick accents, and then Bo has, like, no accent.
Yeah. Can we talk about how in a later scene, Munch calls her Patrizia?
What? Pardon?
I swear there is a line where he was like, yeah, they were there with, was Patrizia there? And I was like,
Patrizia? They call her Patricia Ann at one point, and
Patty Ann. They call her Patty Ann.
Patty Ann. And I'm like, you didn't say that earlier. I heard Patricia.
Her name's Patricia.
Everyone's just calling her. Who is this broad? Nobody asked.
Maybe they remember they had a friggin' Patty last episode, and they were like, oh,
thank you.
It's Patrizia. They're like, say Patrizia in this scene.
Siobhan's face is also like, now we get to see more of it. It's super fucked up. Her right side of her face is all bruised. It looks like she got like smacked by a chair. Lip is cut. Other side of her face is cut. She's pretty fucked up. Benson asks Siobhan what happened. So what happened during the attack? And Siobhan says she already explained 3 times. So Benson offers to take her to the hospital first so that she doesn't have to go through that 1 more time. So Siobhan pauses and then changes her mind. She starts to tell us what happened. She says that she went into her hotel room. She saw her clothes, her makeup, all of her shit was scattered all over the floor. So she's stunned by this and she's kind of taking it in for a second. Like, you know, I would be too. I'd be like, what? And then in that moment, a man comes out from hiding. And she tries to get away. She tries to run out of the room, but he slams her against the wall, keeps her from leaving. Basically, he just gets a hold of her, and he beats the shit out of her. She says that he even at one point ripped the phone out of the wall and started hitting her with it, like, with the cord. Holding the cord, hitting her with the hard part of the fucking phone. Yeah, that is, like, how I picture that happening. So after this really vicious beating, he threw her on the bed, and he raped her. Dun-dun! Security office. So Finn and Munch, this is where, okay, so all of that happened, and this is now where we learn who that guy Winston was. So pretend that I didn't give you the courtesy of telling you. We'd be like, who the fuck is this man? I thought he was a general manager. I'm like, oh, he must be, like, the GM? No, we meet him later. So, dun dun. We're in Winston's office. He at first, because Munch and Finn just walk in and start, like, kind of
that's doing, like, their thing. They just, like, doing walk their in, shit. Like, people already know what they want.
Yeah, they're like, excuse me. We need to talk to the head of security here. We need to see footage. And the guy goes, excuse me, how did you get back here? And they show him their badges. And he's like, oh, I thought you were the press. And we're supposed to hate this guy. We're like, oh, God. What the fuck is wrong with him?
He does nothing wrong.
So Winston says that the security cameras work in the lobby, the basement, all of the floors from like 5 to 2,000. But coincidentally and unfortunately, not 1 through 4, and Siobhan's room was on like the 3rd floor. So that's just because they didn't make the opening deadline and they won't be done until next week. I wrote typical, but that is kind of typical.
Yeah,
not gonna
I mean,
lie.
It's like brand spanking new.
It's brand new. They were probably working from the top down, which makes sense.
Yeah, for like your richest clients to your.
Exactly, because most people, unless you have like a fear of heights or whatever. Not even a fear of heights, but you don't like to be on, like, top floors. Most people don't want to be on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd floor. It's not as glamorous. You want to be on, like, you know, penthouse.
Probably louder, too.
It's closer to the pool, so it probably smells like chlorine and feet. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Upper floors are where it's at, and that's why it happened. But they're... So Munch and Finn are like, oh, God. Yeah, lucky for the people who are on those floors. It's like, well, I'm sorry, but once again, people do not anticipate this shit happening. So they weren't like, you know what? We got to have this done by opening day, lest a rape occur.
You know.
As it does. Notoriously in Manhattan hotels, at least one rape occurs on opening day. Just the reaction was stupid. So Silver Fox Thorpe storms in because of the drama. He's basically being like, oh my God, like, what is all this bullshit happening here? And he sees Munch and Finn just glaring at him. And he's like, who are you? So Munch asks if he's privy to the incident that happened in the hotel. And Thorpe does kind of roll his eyes a little. He's like, my head of security is handling it, and he will be at your disposal. Munch hates this because he's decided he sides with women in this episode, and he tries to press him again. He's like, do you not care about what happened? You don't care that a rape happened, that there's a victim in your hotel? And guess what? No, he doesn't.
Thorpe kind of like walks in. He's like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, that rape that happened. And he just kind of like marches back out.
He's like, we're handling it. Bye.
Thanks.
Goodbye. And once again, goodbye, Alan Thorpe.
I don't think... And we do never not see him again?
We never see him again. Goodbye, Alan and Thorpe. Scene. And scene. That's enough for that actor. Munch asks Winston about the employee who found Siobhan, the guy who found her when she was falling out of the elevator. Winston said his name is Terry Wilde, and he takes them to Terry. Sorry, I'm just saying this because as they're walking... Munch has an issue. Dun dun. We're in the basement. And Munch has an issue. He's like, oh, you stashed this guy in the basement? What, is he in a closet somewhere? Where's your outcry witness? Really don't want us to talk to him, huh?
And they're like, and he's right over here.
He's like, he's in the employee cafeteria on his lunch break. He still has to eat. And Finn goes, yeah, the show must go on. I don't know. So, okay, yes, this is horrible, but, like, is everyone supposed to, like, he's not allowed to.
He's not allowed to go eat?
Even if he's not, like, yeah, like, he's allowed to have a lunch break, even if, like, maybe he's not necessarily eating, maybe he is processing this, but he is on his break. He found a rape victim. He's on a break. So I wrote in my comments, like, they keep making these slick comments as though no one's helping them, and they're literally in the process of helping them.
Well, Munch seems to smell a conspiracy that's not there.
To be fair to the squad, the people they're dealing with are being smarmy, so they're saying, but it's like their line delivery versus what they're actually saying is like a stark contrast, because they're actually being helpful and making sense, but they're saying it like this. He's gotta eat, he's on his break, he's a little traumatized, and they're like, oh, typical. We enter in Terry Wilde sitting in the employee cafeteria as told, but he does seem a little annoyed to be involved. He's a little smidge annoyed. They were asking him about what Siobhan said to him. They're like, so what did Siobhan say to you? And he says, nothing. That was the entire conversation. I was raped. And Munch says that that makes him the outcry witness. They say that a couple times. They like want us. They're like, outcry witness. Outcry witness.
And Terry's like, I might have to go to court.
Yeah. Munch is like, okay, you're the outcry witness. So you're the only person who can testify to that statement in court. And he's like, wait, I might have to go to court? Yeah, a crime happened. A violent crime.
That you were the witness to. I mean, not the crime, but...
The
outcry.
The outcry.
You were the outcry witness, Terry.
Terry. Munch then asks why Terry wasn't at the front desk. He's like, why weren't you at your post? And Terry says that he was celebrity watching. He was hoping to see someone like Julia Roberts. Then he goes, look what happened.
Julia Roberts isn't going to some stinky child hotel.
She didn't have kids in 1990 or 2000. Sorry. She didn't have kids until like 5 years later. Why would she be at your stinky hotel? It's a luxury hotel. We're like stinky, smelly, moldy, smells like hot dogs.
Well,
and children. It would be stinky and smelly because I'm sorry. No offense, parents. Your kids are stinky and smelly. And you know that. Mm. Like, we're, like, stinky and smelly. I meant sticky. Sticky and smelly.
All of it. All of it.
All of it. They're stinky, smelly, sticky. Your kids are icky. They lick things. That's why they had to stop putting lead in paint, because your kids were licking it. They were licking the windowsills like little fucking dogs. Anyway.
End scene.
Dun-dun. Hospital. Blech. So, sorry. BNS were talking to the doctor who examined Siobhan. She's super fucked up from her beating. It's pretty gross, and I have PTSD from my hospital, but her ribs fucked up, her wrist is fucked up, her ankle's fucked up.
And her face is fucked up.
Fucked up. Benson asks if the injuries are consistent with being restrained or held down. Yes, they are. There's evidence of penetration, so there's evidence of rape. I think did they say there was, like, this is gross, they did say this. They said there was too many fluids to determine if there was semen, so they had to like send it out, but they did say there were too many fluids.
It's a good sample. Oh wait, we don't have her anymore. We have Tamara Tooney now.
Oh yeah, she said it was a good sample. She was like, a good sample. We're like,
great. Go away.
Thanks. So they're about to go into Siobhan's room, and Beau is on his way out. So he's like, you know, I was going to go have a smoke. Oh, I keep saying, I'm like, he didn't have an accent, but anyway, he's probably going to have one.
He has
because
a touch
I love
of an accent, a but not like one. Siobhan does.
Yeah, Siobhan literally talks like this. They both talk like this. Benson offers to sit with Siobhan. She had taken a sedative, so she was knocked out. And Sabler goes, hey, I'll buy you a coffee. And they stumble outside. They like man walk outside. Beau is actually super tall. Dun-dun. We go to Siobhan's hotel room. Scene of the crime. Funch are in there with CSI. They're taking a look around. The room's consistent with Siobhan's account. It's trash. There's shit everywhere. We see the phone on the floor pulled out of the wall per her statement. So they're kind of like doing that thing where they're like, you know, blood stain, dent in the wall. And then Finn turns around and kind of turns Munch around. And one of the CSI guys takes a picture of them.
It's super cute and there's no explanation. And I don't really need one.
Not at all. Everyone needed to know it happened, but there's no, we don't know why. So it just happened. It was super cute. So then they walk over to the bed and there's a blood stain on it and duct tape. I don't remember her mentioning duct tape. Did I miss that or?
I don't remember that either. I don't think she really talks about being restrained. They talk about knee marks on her body so that he was like kneeling on her. So I don't know. But the CSI guy is super jazzed and it made me. So he's super jazzed because this is a clean hotel room. No one's ever stayed in it before. So like, remember how they kept talking about hotel murders in Misleader? Where he was like, yes. Oh, it's just one of these hotel murders. Hotel murders are so hard to solve. And it was like partly because they couldn't get any like DNA from her room.
Yeah.
So I was just like, ooh, not a hotel murder, but a hotel crime that is going right.
This one's going right. Yeah, the guy was pumped. He was like, we should all buy a lottery ticket. Usually hotels are really hard to get prints from because they're everywhere. But this baby's brand spanking new.
He was so happy to be there.
He was so happy. And of course, Munch and Finn, or Munch, has decided in this episode that he is going to side with women. And so he's not happy with this. And he goes, good, so you'll have the print samples back first thing tomorrow. And the guy looks like sad because it's probably Friday and he wanted to go out after. But now he has to like label all the samples.
Oh, shit, I shouldn't have talked about that lottery ticket. Fuck.
Oh, yeah. I said SVU is so unimpressed by everyone. They're all just like, ugh. 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 These people. Ugh. We're so much smarter. Ugh. Dostoyevsky. Dun, dun. We're back out. So now we're outside the hospital where Stabler has not bought Bo a coffee, but Bo's smoking a cigarette.
Bo said he did not want a coffee. He just wanted to go out for a smoke.
Okay, you can lower your voice.
I know so much more about this episode because I didn't take notes. I'm like, what the hell's happening?
I forget what it was, but there was when you were going over a scene, it was something like that where you were like, oh, I forget. Oh, it was when you were like, I could do you without leaving a mark. You're like, why are they mad at him for saying that? Olivia said it. I'm like, oh no, that was actually him.
And it's like all super specific stuff.
Yeah. It's because your brain is more open. It's sort of like when you're a kid and you probably know like 70 languages because your brain is more open. But then when your brain, there you go. See, I couldn't even remember that thought. Mm. So again, outside the hospital, Bo's having a cigarette and he says to Stabler, I can't believe it. My baby sister is being attacked and I'm downstairs doing the hokey pokey. And he kind of like, does a little. I could be wrong, but he kind of like sort of like does his arms sort of like, I'm doing the hokey pokey.
It's kind of like, okay, Bo.
It's like, you just want to dance, huh, Bo? Bo can't help it. He's got a sidestep. He's got to flourish his arm. He's got a hokey pokey a little. He's a dancing fiend.
The funny thing is he's probably a Broadway actor.
He probably is. You're right. Because I remember the guy from Noncompliance. You said he was a Broadway actor. And I'm like, I can see that, actually.
Yeah.
So think about it. And I hate Broadway. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't like musicals. Stabler asks if anyone around the city or their hotel stood out to them before the attack. But Bo says it's basically everyone because they're from North Carolina. And I was like, I guess what he probably meant was, well, we don't know anybody, so everyone stood out. But I'm like, no, I know what he means. Like, I'm from North Carolina. I don't see just fucking people, like, sitting pantsless on top of a fire hydrant gyrating all the time, Stabler. That was alarming. That was my first day in New York. Stabler asks if anyone was paying close attention to Siobhan at any point throughout the day. Too much attention, perhaps. And Bo kind of thinks for a minute. And then he mentions that when they went to Central Park, that same day, by the way, they were at Central Park, like, hours before the attack, they saw this guy who was putting on a puppet show, and he seemed pretty interested in Siobhan.
But don't worry about it, because we're never going to mention that again.
Ever again. We don't even look for him. Because you know how normally they'll waste our time with a scene where they go and find, like, the puppet guy, and he's like, ah, da, 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 da.
Oh, you mean like the balloon guy who was like, what are you, a pink poodle, ladybug kind of person? Ah, da, da, da.
Yes, I was thinking they're going to go find that guy again. I'm like, oh, we get to see the pink poodle guy. So, dun, dun. Now we're in Patricia, a.k.a. Patrizia, a.k.a. Patty Ann's room. Those are all of her names. But it's Bo's wife, Siobhan's sister-in-law. We're in her and Bo's room, which was right next to Siobhan's room. So it was one of those hotels where you can open a middle door and, like, say hi to each other. She tells him about the course of the day. She says that she and Siobhan and Bo and Tara all went to the park. And then after the park, she and Siobhan went to the pool. And then they went back to their rooms to get ready for the party. So Tara and Bo were already down at the party, hanging out by that time. they asked if Patricia heard anything during the attack, like any screaming or whatever. And she says no. And she goes, oh, God, it's probably because I was blow drying my hair.
And now she's saying this Tara has climbed onto Munch and is just kind of like
staring at him. Yeah, she's like, him.
Like,
and Munch like kind of like puts his hand on her back, almost like she's a cat that has jumped up on the arm of the chair. And you're like, oh, yes, the cat.
I think children love Munch.
Oh, it was probably blow drying my hair. They ask if she noticed anyone suspicious. Same shit. No, she didn't mention the puppet guy, so
that's a dead end.
Very much a dead end. Then kind of in the middle, like, she goes, no one's suspicious. Would you mind if we finish this conversation a little later? Due to what's happened, I feel like I really need to spend some time with Tara. And they're like, yeah, sure, totally reasonable.
She was like, you know that, like, rich person, like, being indisposed thing? Can I, like, go do that?
Sequestered. Yes, she is sequestered, right? That was when, yeah, she's like, we're quite wealthy, so I need to do that thing where I need to go sequester myself.
And they were like, oh, yeah, of course. We let all the rich people sequester.
Totally, totally. Just, how rich are you? Wait, do you have your tax statements? We need to make sure you're rich enough.
To sequester yourself.
Dun dun. So now we're at the station. Winston, the security guy.
Who has been getting shit on this entire time by Munch and Finn.
The entire time insinuating that he is dirty. Obstructing things, not being helpful, hiding men in closets, essentially. This guy went down to SVU headquarters, which I believe is downtown in the financial district. This hotel was up by 49th Street on the way west side. Anyway, so he brought them a cart with a TV and all of the footage from the day, all of the tapes. He brings it to them. He even wheels it in himself. And Munch goes, what's this, Spanky? Spanky. A grown man. So Winston goes, brought you all the footage from the day, brought you one of our TVs to play it on, one of our VCRs, state of the art. He goes, happy now? And he kind of says it. He doesn't even say it like happy now. He's like, happy now? And Munch goes, only if there's not 18 minutes missing from the footage. Not even a thank you.
Spanky's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, that's it. Bye, Spanky. So he's gone. But his entire life on this show was just getting shat on.
Does his job the whole time. And we learn this guy has left the force. Like, he used to be a police officer. So he was probably like, you know what? I'm going to get this new sweet security gig. I'm going to finally get some respect. I'm going to get some respect put on my name. Not so bad for old Winston. And then he meets these clowns.
Just mean. So then we cut to BNSR at one of their desks. And Benson says that the sketch artist had just gotten done meeting with Siobhan. And Sabler says, coincidentally, the lab just sent back the fingerprint test. So the only print that couldn't be eliminated from, they don't really explain, all the prints they took, was a man named Russell Ramsey. I think he's like supposed to be like 27 or maybe 30. He was released 18 months ago on a charge of statutory rape. Whoa. So they compare Russell, they do this like really adorable thing where they're like, and they compare Russell Ramsey's mugshot photo to the police sketch that Siobhan just did, and it's the exact same person.
It's a perfect match.
Perfect match, except for Russell Ramsey has a stash in the picture, and it did not suit him. So he doesn't have a stash. We'll meet him later on. They walk over to Munch. He's in the interview room. He's already watching his ungrateful ass is already sitting there watching the tapes on the TV that he was given for free. So he's watching the security footage, and they're like, hey, you know, we think we got the guy. Fingerprints, they explain it to him. They show him Ramsey's photo. Munch goes, hey, that's Happy Feet. And they're like, huh? I hate when people fucking do that.
Hey, that's blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we don't have context. And that's a nickname you made up in your own head.
Like 2 seconds ago, because you just started watching this footage 2 seconds ago.
And then he points, you know what I mean.
This guy right here, the guy from last episode did the same thing when they were like, hi, do you know about, what was her last name? Lloyd. Andrews. The neighbor, they're like, hi, you know about the Andrews? And he goes, the Springers? And they're like, no, the Andrews. He goes, I call them the Springers because it's like Jerry Springer. And I'm like, okay, no one but you knows that.
You're talking to the police.
We met you 2 seconds ago.
We, the audience, get it because we saw the whole bit you did earlier where you turned off the TV. But they weren't there. They didn't see that.
So Munch points to home. Okay, yeah. Oh, that's Happy Feet. And they're like, who? So he points to a guy who's literally on the screen right there dancing like a hooligan. He is dancing so hard. Like, you know, when they're like, when someone's just going to town dancing.
It was a lot. I kind of loved it.
It was a lot and it was a little sad. Like, you know, when someone's having a, he was having a good time. He was
enjoying himself.
He was enjoying himself, as you can tell by our voices.
He probably didn't do anything.
He probably didn't do anything wrong. So then he's like eating hot dogs. He's kind of booping and bopping, just looking
shoving
around.
Shoving them in his mouth, like Detective Porter was doing earlier.
Right, as you should with hot dogs. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. So Stabler notes the timestamp on this footage of him dancing super hard was after Siobhan was attacked. And they remark that his behavior is a little odd for someone who just committed a crime. Hanging out in the hotel, stuffing his face and dancing. And I, yeah, exactly. Yes.
Should you put a pin in that? They're like, but whatever. Anyway, where's Cabot? We gotta go find her.
It makes no sense that a rapist would stay in the hotel where he had just committed a crime and put himself on camera and in the group of people and eat no less.
Anyway,
let's go report this to Cabot. Right then, Finn knocks and tells Benson that Cragen is looking for her. Dun dun.
Dun dun.
Cragen's office. Sorry, it's gonna be funny. It's for a reason. I'm not laughing about it. Cragen is solemn. So Olivia walks in and she's like, hey, we got kind of a break in the case. Can this wait? So Cragen goes, sit down, Olivia. Like, he sounds so mad. I'm like, you're so bad at being, like, normal.
She's like, what's up? I haven't been in trouble since season 1, episode 1, where you told me if I didn't keep getting emotional, I'm going to get fired. Is this, what's going on?
Right, and she won't sit down. She's like, no. And he's like, I really think you should sit down. And he kind of, like, raises his voice, and she's like, no. What is this? And there's another cop there, and I'm like, I guess he should be, okay, so Cragen tells Benson that her mother has been in an accident and she didn't make it. So Olivia starts to tear up and she immediately takes to a whisper. She goes, how? And he tells her that she fell down the stairs at 110th and Broadway. And she immediately goes, no, my mother never takes the subway. So Cragen pauses and then he says, the entrance was right outside the Velvet Room. And Olivia nods and whispers, she was drunk. So,
and the fucked up thing is, earlier today, I went on like Google Earth and found the stairs and texted a picture to Paige. I'm like, this is where Serena Benson met her end.
Now, I don't know what was there in 2000, but what is there now is a West Side Market. And I will tell you, but I have stumbled out of a West Side Market drunk. I didn't get drunk at the West Side Market. I was walking home and I passed West Side Market and I was like, oh, they have a turkey sandwich on a croissant.
The ghost of Serena Benson's over your shoulder like, the Velvet Room used to be here.
Oh, don't go down the stairs to the 1 train.
I never take the subway.
I never take the subway. So I wonder if she... You know, when you do that when you're drunk and you're like, you do things, you're like, it would be a good idea to bring my neighbor his mail. And why would you do this? I would never do that normally, but like drunk, you're like, yeah, you know, I think it would be cool
nice
to do that.
To do.
I'm going to bring Glenn his mail. So I wonder if Serena Benson was like, you know what? I never take the subway.
What a scene. Can you imagine like you're hustling down the subway stairs on a random Tuesday and all of a sudden some drunk broad just comes like ass over tea kettle like next to you and you're like, oh, fuck.
An older lady too. You're just like, oh, my God.
I'd be like, oh, my God, ma'am.
So, okay, apologies. Don't mean to laugh, but Serena Benson has died.
And we were certain she was in future episodes. R.I.P.
Dun dun, the streets. Munch and Stabler are walking across the street and they briefly discuss Olivia. Like, oh, you hear about Benson? Yeah, how's she doing? Oh, that's pretty good. Munch tells Stabler his brother is a mortician if Benson has any questions. Like what? What questions could she not ask Melinda Warner? But she could ask your fake brother.
I think Munch is like me, where sometimes like shit comes out of his mouth and later he's like in the shower like, my brother is a, what the fuck was I, what?
Not even true. No. And so Beth Stabler actually goes, you have a brother? And then Munch doesn't answer the question.
Not important.
So they approach a man who is Ramsay. He's got his back to them and he's listening to music and he's dancing and he's spraying insecticide on the stoop because he's pest control. So they grab him and they Mirandize him immediately and he's confused. So done, done. Now we're in the mean interrogation room. Ramsay looks terrified and he insists that he never raped anyone. They ask him about the statutory rape that he was convicted of 3 years ago, and Kevin explains that he and the girl in that case were actually dating, and they were in love. And they're like, yeah, right, and Munch in general is very hard on him.
Now, to be fair, she was 15, and he was whatever age he was.
22.
Yeah, not cool.
Stabler asks Ramsay about Wednesday afternoon, so that's the day of the attack. Ramsay says that he was at a hotel party with a girl, Siobhan, he says. Stabler shakes his head. He goes, you rape her, you beat her, and now you're using her for an alibi?
Maybe not putting all the clues together.
Right.
To be fair, no one is, but.
Also, as if he's going to go, yeah, that's correct, sir, yes. Sorry, I didn't realize you knew about the rape, so I was acting like it hadn't happened. So Ramsay pauses, and he kind of looks around, and he goes, that bitch said I raped her? And I'm only saying it like that because it's supposed to be, he's literally kind of like, I felt it. He's looking like, what?
Yeah.
It's like probably how I would feel. The police showed up and took me from my job, and they were like, that guy that you went home to Crown Heights with last weekend? I'd be like, that skinny fucking twat bucket who didn't even have a bed frame? Guy I met at a dingy bar on 7th and 1st? Anyways. So there's an awkward silence there after he says that. And then he tells them that he's like, it was a date. I met her at a bar. He's like, she gave me her hotel key. So outside the room, Cragen and Cabot are looking on, and Cabot's going, please, please, please go to trial.
She's so psyched, and she's in tan again.
Yes, she is. And Cragen says that he wishes that they could use Ramsay's prior statutory conviction against him. But Cabot says that it's too prejudicial because they were in a relationship. But she knows that she could bury Ramsay with a positive ID from Siobhan because, and she holds up a picture of Siobhan in the hospital that she's like, if I show the jury this, he'll be double convicted. It was something like that.
Something just like, yeah.
So dun dun. Now we're in the lineup room, the room where they do the lineups. Siobhan's nervously waiting for the lineup to begin. They lead in the line of boys, and because they're all like young, kind of handsome men. Because I forgot to mention, Ramsay's like, again, he's like 28, 30. He's pretty handsome.
Yeah, he's pretty cute.
They lead all the boys in, and she starts to get emotional immediately when she sees Ramsay. And she tells them, she goes, number four. They're like, who is that? She goes, that's the man who raped me. I'm giving her Bobby Hill voice, sorry.
She does kind of have a Bobby Hill voice.
She a little bit does. Number four, I don't know you.
That's my purse! I don't know you!
Dun dun. Bullpen. Munch is hanging out by his desk when a woman who looks like Virginia Madsen. I was like, why is Virginia Madsen in this episode? But it's not.
I thought she kind of looked like Amy Carlson from last episode, but with like a different hairdo, but like the same voice and face.
The voice for sure. Even though hers is a little more high-pitched, she talks a little more like this. And you're like, oh, it's like the Mickey Mouse New Yorker accent. You know, like Cindy Stocklash. Yo, what are you doing to Ray?
She's the Patricia Andrews before Lloyd.
Got to Lloyd. Yeah. This woman who looks like Virginia Madsen and or Patricia from the last episode walks in, and she's asking to speak with somebody about Russell Ramsay. So he's like, you talk to me about it. And she tells Munch that her name is Shelley Levack.
I was like, of course it is.
Yes, you are. So Munch recognizes that name as the name of Russell Ramsay's original victim for his statutory rape case. Sorry. Shelley clarifies that it wasn't rape, that she and Ramsay were dating and in love, even though she was 15 and he was 22, which Munch points out. And she says that her parents were the one who called the police because they wanted the relationship to be over, which is, I don't know. You know what? I'm going to save that because we don't have enough time. We don't have time to hear my thoughts on that. Shelley says that she knows Ramsay is innocent and that he didn't rape that skank. So Munch tells her that Ramsay did admit to sleeping with Siobhan, and Shelley looks heartbroken. And she's like, he cheated on me? Well, I cheated on him first. We broke up a couple days ago. It was just a misunderstanding. He wouldn't rape nobody. She didn't say that, but she did say...
That is what she sounds like, though.
She said they broke up a couple days before, and she slept with somebody else. And she knows that he wouldn't rape anybody. He's harmless, basically. So cut to Cragen's office, and Munch says...
I hope you wrote this down.
I recorded it, and I wrote it down. Cut to Cragen's office, and Munch storms in on his white horse, because he's white knighting nerd ass, and he goes... There should be a special level in hell for the scun-sucking gangrenous malignancy of a mental amoeba.
There should be a special level of hell for this pus-sucking gangrenous malignancy of a mental amoeba.
Somebody steal your parking space again?
And I love Cragen. Someone take your parking spot again, John?
Cragen's like, what the fuck? Oh yeah, so Munch tells him about Shelley. Tell me why schmucks like us sit at home alone while Ramsay has this nice girl sitting and waiting for him. 5 years older than 15, he said. He's like, she's 5 years older, but none the wiser. I'm like, so she's 20. You're 10 billion years old.
He also seems to really like her for no reason.
Yes, he is manic pixie dream girling her. She showed up and had an accent and was like, he didn't rape nobody, Mr. Munch, I swear. What if schmucks like us sit at home alone when this nice girl? I'm like, this nice girl who what? What did she do?
You know nothing about her.
Dun-dun. Conference room. Sorry. I've been getting hysterical. Conference room. Munch and Finn are sitting down. They're watching the security footage again. And they watch the section just before Siobhan exits the elevator. So the part, like, right before she, like, opens it and falls out into Terry's arms. So they're watching Terry. And they see Terry's in the footage. And instead of watching the door where presumably the celebrities he was looking for would be walking in, Julia Roberts, for some reason, would be walking in, he's actually watching the elevator really intently. So they're like, why is he looking at the elevator and not like the entrance where celebrities would be? In the footage, we see the doors open and we see Ramsay step out. He and Wilde look at each other for a second after he steps out of the elevator. And then Ramsay walks over to join the party. And he does look a little embarrassed, but... So Munch and Finn think that that's suspicious that they made eye contact.
For a brief second.
And now they think that they're in cahoots. Dun-dun.
Dun-dun.
Dun-dun. Thorpe Palace. The hotel. Sorry, I feel like I have to mention that
it's a hotel. Dumbest name for a hotel.
Funch go there, and they're looking for Terry Wilde again for further questioning. And this is the general manager, and he tells them that Terry's actually been fired. And they're like, why? And
well, they're like, oh, yeah, you're trying to fire him. You're trying to cover it up. And they're like, well, he stopped showing up, so...
They did the thing again where they're like, we are so tired of these people getting in the way of our investigation. What did you do? Kill him? Did you send him to Alaska?
And they're like, he stopped showing up for work. That's
right after the incident.
Yeah. And they're like, oh.
Really? They're like, yeah. So they get his file. They're like... they're talking, they're looking through it, and they see that there's a previous hotel that Terry worked at. So they head there to ask some questions. Dun dun, the previous hotel that Terry worked at. So they go up to the front desk there, and they're asked to speak to Terry Wilde. So the guy they're asking gets a little weird, and he kind of like looks to his side, and they're like, do you remember what they said? They're like, is there a problem? You have an issue with Terry Wilde? Did things end on a bad note?
So the problem is they go and they talk to this really nice lady, and they're like, where's the manager? And she's like, oh, he's right over here. So they go and he sees her point to them, and they go up to him and they're like, where's Terry Wilde? And he's like, and she walks over and she like flips her hair over her shoulder to reveal her name tag. And she goes, I'm Terry Wilde. And then everyone's like, oh, come again.
I liked how she said it. She goes, I'm Terry Wilde. What did I do?
Oh yeah. She had a really charming smile too. She's like, what'd I do, guys? And they're like,
Dun dun. Station. So now we know Terry Wilde isn't who he says he is.
Oh
no. So again, everyone thinks this is a conspiracy of some kind. Yeah, it is.
They're kind
of
right.
They're not wrong. So Cragen calls BNS into his office, and there we discover that Thorpe's insurance, his name's Tupper, but he's the insurance agent.
I thought he was the lawyer.
And he tells him that Thorpe, Daddy Thorpe, is willing to pay quietly to settle this incident with Siobhan and her family, make the whole thing go away, keep it away from the press. So, of course, BNS and Cragen are not impressed. Dun dun. Now we're at Riker's. Cabot is in there with Ramsay and his attorney, and Cabot asks Ramsey how she knew Terry Wilde. He says that he doesn't. And then she says he's basically kind of fucked because the bartenders at the bar where he claimed to be and met Siobhan don't remember him. And he's like, well, I have a forgettable face. And essentially, he's just adamant that he didn't do anything. So he's still a little emotional. He's still being like, I didn't rape her. And that's all we get every time we see him. He's just going, I didn't rape her. And they're all going, yeah, you did. And then they leave. So dun dun, we are now at a Fleabag motel where they have where Funch have tracked. They've tracked Terry Wilde there, and the hotel manager is pretty funny. He's like, yeah, that's definitely the guy. That's the guy.
Did he? I think he came in but said his name was Terry Wilde, but then he wrote down a different name.
That's what it was. Yeah, it was something weird, but he was like, no, it's definitely him. So he takes them upstairs, and he knocks on the door, and Terry's like, what? And I thought he was going to be like, hey, there's a leak in there that I have to check out, but he kind of says something like weird and sketchy. He's like, you got a phone call. And the guy's like, who is it? He goes, they didn't say, but you got a phone call. So Terry opens the door and Funch busts in. And the room doesn't actually look that bad. It's supposed to be a Fleabag down on Delancey, but it's actually kind of a nice room. So Me in interrogation room. Terry Michael, because his other name is Michael, admits that he stole the real Terry Wilde's resume off of the internet, which just seems so early to be doing that, but
I know.
Okay. She's like, hi, I'm Terry Wilde. I know how to use the internet.
I know how to get my identity stolen.
I'm Terry Wilde. This is indeed.com. So he gets it off the internet. She had a really good hotel resume, so he used it to get into the job at the Thorpe Palace. And he denies knowing Ramsey or that the attack was a setup. So outside of that room, Stabler tells Finn and Munch that Terry Michael's real name.
His really real name this time, you guys.
It's because at first it was Terry Wilde, then it was like Michael Bernstein, and then it was Kyle Kiplahan or something like that. I wrote Kyle Kipler for a while, so I might say Kyle Kipler, but it's like Kyle Kiplahan. And he's a disgraced former roofer from North Carolina, and he's actually connected to Bo. They went to the same high school and juvenile facility. So now these two dum-dums think that Bo, Kyle Kipler, have both set Siobhan up to be raped. They literally go, her own brother set her up to be raped.
But also still Ramsey.
Oh, and still Ramsey. And still Russell Ramsey. Cragen walks in and says that Bo is threatening a $10 million lawsuit against Thorpe Palace. And everyone's kind of like, So dun dun. Now we're at back at the Thorpe Palace. We're in Bo and Patricia's new, really swanky hotel room because they gave it to them because, you know, what with the rape and all. It's got a balcony and everything. So Munch and Stabler are there and they're speaking with Patricia, and she's in like a really cute summer outfit, but it's very strange.
Well, it's very revealing, and until then she's been kind of conservatively dressed.
Yeah.
She's in a plaid halter top, but it's also a crop top. And like Daisy Dukes.
Yeah, short shorts. She's pouring him sweet tea. I don't know where they got the sweet tea.
And they have a platter of croissants on the table.
So many croissants. Sorry, I realize I have you up there and that's why I'm looking up. It looks like I'm not staring at you, but I promise I am. She tells him that they've been trying to distract Siobhan ever since the whole mess, you know, taking her shopping and everything. Bo especially has been very good with her. So Stabler asks about Bo and Siobhan. And have they always been this close, his brother and sister? And Patricia explains their family dynamic. Bo is older than Siobhan by, it sounds like, 10-ish years. And Bo left the home when Siobhan was still really young. So there's a big age gap. And the parents died a few months ago. And after that, Bo reached out and decided that he wanted to reconnect with Siobhan and take care of her. No, they are not fucking. No, they are not fucking. I know what you're thinking.
That's another episode.
That's a whole other episode. That's a whole.
Don't worry, it's coming.
So, dun dun. Now we're in Siobhan's former room, you know, where she was attacked. So, Stabler and Funch, they're all in there rechecking the room. And now they switch their angle and they wonder if possibly the attacker didn't go in through the front door. He actually went in through the adjoining room where Patricia and Bo were staying. This is also
not what happened.
I mean, yes and no, but. So they open that door and there's a blood stain on the door frame and they're like, oh, now it all is making sense.
We've got them, kind of.
So now we're back at Riker's. Munch is with Ramsey. So at this point, Ramsey's face, the whole right side of his face is fucked up. It's bruised. Someone clocked his shit. Munch asks how Ramsey knows Bo. and Patricia and Kyle. So at first, Ramsey says he doesn't. He's like, how do you know Beau? I don't. Do you know Kyle? And then Ramsey kind of pauses and goes, yeah. And so the Mudge goes, no, you don't.
He's like, I'll tell you whatever you want to hear. Just tell me what to say, and like, I'll say it.
I'm good. Get out of here. He goes, it's awful. And he's saying how bad it is and how
he's getting jumped constantly.
Left and right. And Mudge asks, and I'm also wondering, and they never tell us, he goes, but how is this any different from when you were in jail for 3 years the first time for statutory rape?
And the guy's just like, you gotta get me out of here.
Yeah, he goes, it just is. It's just worse. Mudge asks why Ramsey lied to Shelly about sleeping with Siobhan, if it wasn't, you know, like, a lie. And he says that he loves Shelly and he didn't lie to her because he didn't rape Siobhan. The sex was consensual.
And basically he like busts out. He's like, I'm guilty of like making poor decisions, but not guilty of that.
Yes. He's guilty of bad judgment. And now I'm here. So Mudge is like, he seems sympathetic at this point. I think he's starting to really, he's playing bad cop, but he's realizing that like Kevin's obviously.
He's like, huh?
Yeah. He's like, cause he doesn't know these people. And he's like, ew. And he's really a wreck. Ramsey's truly a wreck. He's like, you could see the fear in his eyes. Dun, dun. Now we're at the station. Benson walks into Cragen's office and thanks him for sending her flowers. She's still in her dress from...
She literally came from her mother's funeral. Did no one else go? Like, Olivia just went by herself to her... And then went to work after.
Yeah, well, then she definitely went to work after.
And Cragen's like, could you at least take the rest of the day? And she's like, no, I'm good.
Well, and the best part was, I don't know about they. I watched it again, and I probably missed it, but they don't. So when you see the scene, it's just from the waist up. So we don't know Olivia's wearing her funeral dress yet. We just think she's wearing, like, a boat neck top.
You don't know that until the following scene.
Until the following scene. Which, okay, so in this scene, basically, he's like, please take the day, Olivia. This is crazy. Like, why are you at work? And she basically said, she's like, listen, Cragen, I accepted that my mother was, she didn't say this, but a violent alcoholic. She goes, I've accepted the consequences. I knew this shit was possible. I just need to cope by getting back to work and distracting myself. He's like, okay. But she's very whispery again. She's like, I'm fine. Let me do my job. So we do. And dun dun, this is where we find out she's in her fucking funeral dress, because we cut to, they're in the Miller's new massive hotel room, and she's meeting with Siobhan in a fucking dress.
And Siobhan's in just like the most luxurious looking terry cloth bathrobe.
Benson, she's asking about her relationship with Beau, you know, the whole, like, how are you and Beau close? What's your relationship like? Siobhan tells him basically the exact same story that Patricia told them. Beau left when she was 8. And really wasn't around at all. And then a few months ago, her parents died. So mind you, she's supposed to be 17. And he came back to take care of me.
She's got like a puppy dog face.
She does. We hear the phone ring in the other room. This is a massive hotel room. And so Siobhan gets up to go answer it. She shuts the door and Benson starts.
She kind of even gives like Olivia a little bit of like, and then like shuts the door like, gotta make it a little private, you know, sorry.
She's like, oh, sorry. Better see who that is. 17 years old. Like, who's it going to be? You're in New York. Shut the door like, I'll be right back. And then so Olivia starts to snoop in her pumps and her funeral dress. She goes over to the desk and she sees there's magazines on top of the desk. Cartier magazine and even a magazine with yachts in it. So not too weird for a luxury hotel in Manhattan, like let the people know that they can shop while they're here. But these Cartier and yacht magazines have bookmarks in them.
Yes.
A lot of bookmarks in them. And they're kind of like opened as if people were just, I think one might have a note kind of like, buy this one or something.
I want this. Yeah,
this looks good. At the exact same moment, we hear Siobhan start to yell from behind the other door at the person on the phone.
Is she stupid?
A very good question, because she's yelling, no, no, that's not good enough. Make sure I get my $3 million because I sure as hell did my part.
There's a cop in the room next to you. All you had to do was be like, hey, yeah, I can't really talk right now. Yeah, one of the officers is here checking on me. Like, let's talk in a little bit.
All you had to do.
She's like, no, I'm going to get my $3 million.
No, no, that's not going to work. No, no, I want to get my $3 million. I sure as hell did my part.
Olivia didn't even have to do any fucking, like, detective work. Like, she is currently doing some. But Siobhan's just, like, next door, like, yeah, I'm in on it. I did it.
You know we framed that man for rape so that we could extort this rich person here in Manhattan, New York. We know we did that. No, I'm kidding. She didn't say that. But it was, she might as well.
Essentially.
Might as well have.
So Olivia's like, troubling.
Knock, knock. Sweetness. Siobhan.
Sweetness?
Dun-dun, we're at the station. The squad discusses his family. They've got them up on the board. They're drawing chalk arrows. So we find out that Bo is, this is not fake, is Siobhan's biological older brother. There is a real age gap. She is his actual sister. He is a petty criminal who has been in and out of jail for scamming. Construction scams and the like. They didn't really explain what construction scams are, but I imagine it's when you pay a contractor to do work and that they never do.
And then you leave.
Yeah, and then he's like, goodbye. I'm not building your shelves. So Kyle Kiplahan is Bo and Siobhan's second cousin. They decide that all of them are working together to set up Daddy Thorpe for a massive payout. Wow, finally we got here. So they're all about to leave. They're like, yeah, we did it. And Munch goes, hey, wait, where does Ramsey land in all this? And they're all like,
oh.
Right. The rapist. The whole reason we're here. Anyway, dun-dun. So if you're wondering what, no, so we're going to handle that later. Dun-dun. We're back at Thorpe Palace. The Millers have arrived to pick up their $10 million check, which to me feels like you can't just pick up a check like that.
I know.
It would need to be like, I think they would have to give it to you in installments. They would have to be like, no, you get like this much now, this much here, this much there. Like we do that.
Or like a wire transfer, like a whole ass check.
Yeah, like they're going to give you, they're going to present you like one of those comically large checks. Like,
sorry, you were raped at our hotel.
Millers arrive, pick up their $10 million check. The secretary calls someone to announce their arrival. She's like, hello, the Millers are here to pick up their $10 million check. And then Thorpe's insurance and or lawyer guy, Tupper, arrives again. And he tells him that his supervisor needs to handle transactions of this magnitude. So, sorry, my list was coming out. So they're about to turn and leave with Tupper. And the secretary stands up and offers to take Tara, Bo and Patricia's daughter, to the daycare while they wait. And they're like, is it really going to take that long? Which I'm like, yeah, it's a $10 million check.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And they're like, yeah, it will. And so they're like, okay, here you go, Tara, go in the last lady. So they enter the next room. And Tupper says, like, Mr. Scotch Tape, they're here. So Mr. Scotch Tape turns around and we see Cragen undercover as Tupper's supervisor, insurance boss man, Scotch Tape.
And he's so thrilled to be there.
I was going to say, Cragen is so excited.
He's having so much fun. He's like, right this way, you guys.
Thank you, Tupper. That'll be all. I lost it. I was like, this man just really dismissed Tupper. So yeah, he sits them all down. He's giving them the apology. Like, we're so sorry this happened. We can't believe this went on. Whoa, we hope you forgive us. Blah, 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 blah. So then Siobhan goes, yeah. Are we going to be able to take the check home today? And he's like, yes. Unless you want to withdraw the claim. And everyone kind of
all like
look at each other. They're kind of all like, why would we do that stupid fucking thing? So he signs it, hands Bo, I think, the check. Bo takes it and nods. And then Cragen pushes an intercom button and goes, we're done in here. And then the squad and then the few spare cops pop in. You know, the spare cops they always bring with them because
and they make a lot of noise.
They do. They like bust in. So they arrest everybody and they like haul out Patricia and Bo. Siobhan's, of course, like they're putting her in handcuffs. She goes, oh my God, what's going on? What did they do? And they're all like, yeah, right. We know what the fuck's going on here. We know you're in on it. Why don't you tell us about your dead parents again? And then it's revealed that Bo and Siobhan's parents are actually both in jail for check scams.
And she was like, oh, I was so embarrassed. I just couldn't say. And they're like, shut up.
I was so ashamed. And then Benson goes, were you ashamed of your age too? You're 23, not 17. And then, so Siobhan's trying to cry. She's like, Bo forced me. He forced me to do it. And Benson's not having it. So she's trying to drag her out. Siobhan kind of does that thing where she like stops and goes, I want a deal. Dun dun. Cut to the nice interrogation room. This is the moment that Siobhan stole my heart.
Shines.
Siobhan, free of her burden, free of her shame. Not really her shame, but she's like, oh, jigs up.
She has no shame.
She has no shame. She doesn't care. She's
like, oh, whatever. What do you guys want
to
know?
Yeah, she's like, oh, all right, going to jail.
I'll tell you whatever.
With my parents. Let's go. I'm gonna love this family. So Siobhan coolly explains that together, she, Bo, Kyle, and Patricia devised a plan to get Kyle to be an employee at the hotel at Thorpe Palace, as a desk clerk specifically, so that he could add them to the reservation system as hotel guests for the opening day. Stabler asks about Russell Ramsay, and Siobhan looks at them like they're stupid.
Which they kind of are.
They kind of are! She's like, they found him off of a sex offender registry on the internet. She goes, the sex is consensual. And they're like, their brain's broken. So she explains that a little later. They're like, well, who beat you up? And she explains that that was Patricia. She's like, that was Patricia. Did a pretty damn good job too. Hurt like hail. She then goes on to say that Kyle was waiting for her right outside the elevator so that he could catch her right before the press saw. And so Alex goes, but why didn't you want the press to see? Because wouldn't that have made for a bigger, stronger civil suit? Siobhan, a genius.
An actual genius.
A literal genius. Shakes her head and says, those take years. We knew Thorpe would pay to keep it quiet and gag money pays out real quick.
No shame. She's like, yep.
So Cabot reminds her that she'll have to testify. She says that it's like acquisition court or acquiescence court or something like that. But she's like, you're going to have to say all this in court, by the way. And she's probably looking at 5 years probation. So Siobhan looks wholly unbothered by that, obviously, because 5 years probation means you don't go to jail at all. And Benson asks her what was going through her mind when she was taking that beating that fractured her ribs, her like wrist and her foot. Siobhan nods her head, smiles and responds, Hal's going to spend all that money.
Yes, queen.
Yes. So Stabler, Finn and Munch discuss how Siobhan was actually probably the ringleader of this whole scam. And I'm like, yeah, you think? But apparently when they talked to Beau and Patricia, according to them, Siobhan and the parents were going to originally do this whole thing together. But when the parents went to jail for check fraud, she had to find another family. So she basically browbeat her estranged older brother, Beau, and his family to help join in. So they didn't even really want to do it. She got them to
do it. And she's kind of scary. So you totally believe them. You're like, no, she showed up and told them what's what.
I was going to say, I 100% believe that she told these people that they had to do it. Like, I can see her parents being like the weird, like crazy matriarch patriarchs who were like, you're doing the chick scam, Bo. That's probably why he ran away. He was like, I don't want to fraud no more elderly people, mama and pappy. And they're like, you're going to do it, Bo. You will do this scam. You will do it one more time. So, Stabler notes that they need to get Ramsay out of jail because Siobhan needs to go to court first. They can't really do it right now, basically. It might take 24 hours. So Munch urges them, implores them to put a rush on it. Done. So now we're at, the allocution hearing. Siobhan doesn't give a fuck. She says that Beau made sure to report the rape to the hotel and then to the hospital. And once the cops had Ramsay in custody, that's when Beau began the calm. Stabler and Benson walk in right then, and they walk up to Alex and start whispering something to her. Alex gets that look in her eye, and she asks how Siobhan and her family found Ramsay. Siobhan says very casually that she trolled the internet for sex offenders, and she picked Ramsay because he wasn't gross and he didn't look dangerous.
Fair.
Very fair. And he lacked him young, she adds. She says that Kyle Kiplin followed Ramsay around the city for a few days to get down his routine, see where he hung out, and then Siobhan ended up going to his favorite bar to seduce him. She gave him a duplicate key to her room and told him to meet her there, what time, when, how, all of it. Alex asks how she definitively knew that Ramsay would show up to the hotel. Like, how did she know that he would even go? Like, what if he didn't show up to the hotel? And Siobhan goes, he's an ex-con with a bad job who likes young girls. It's kind of a no-brainer. She says, and what if he didn't? And Siobhan's like, I would have plan B'd it.
And what was plan B? And she was kind of like, honey, what do you think?
Honey, no man passes up 3 sex.
No man passes up 3 sex. So we're actually here with Judge Ridenour. Sorry, Brittany's better at that than I am. Judge Ridenour has been here the entire time. And you know he's kind of like, she doesn't give a fuck. He goes, Siobhan, what do you plead? And Siobhan pleads guilty. He notes that even though she has a history of flim-flamming, the court is still happy that she turned into co-conspirators. They have a bunch of convictions. So they're going to give her with 5 years probation. And I'm like,
she's going to do this again. She basically was like, oh, I'm sorry this one didn't work out, but the next one will.
And I'm surprised that faking a rape and framing somebody isn't punishable by more than just probation. Anyway, don't worry, because he bangs his gavel. Siobhan's pumped. She's smiling. She thanks her court-appointed attorney, and then Benson and Stabler rush over there and cuff her, and she's like, hey, we had a day, you can't go back on that. And they tell her that Russell Ramsey was beaten, raped, and subsequently died from his injuries in Rikers the night before. And now, Siobhan is under arrest for manslaughter. So, again, begs the question, why wouldn't she have been under arrest for putting him there in the first... I mean, she is now, but only after, like, he died.
Yeah. Yeah, like, no false allegation where they could definitively prove she made one.
Yeah. Kragen is walking with Munch. Munch is, in his way, upset. He's sullen. We can't see his eyes because he is wearing sunglasses indoors, per usual. Kragen's telling him that they're able to use Siobhan's original testimony at the allocution court about how she found Ramsey, what she did to set him up. They can use that to convict her in Ramsey's death. Munch isn't pleased, though, because Ramsey died. And... he's like, okay. And Kragen goes, Munch, we got her. And Munch is like, at what cost?
And this time I agree with him. I'm like, a man died, Don.
Yeah. He's like, we got her.
Manuel were soups mean to.
Soups mean to. And like, they even forgot about. They were like, cool, this whole family's in cahoots together. And Munch is like, and the guy that they framed?
Oh, right, right.
Dun dun, one more dun dun. We are at Unified Shipping's shipping yard. Munch finds Shelley Levack in the yard at work. So he approaches her and she's like, oh, what's wrong? I told you everything I know. What's happening? She's talking to him. He tells her that Ramsey was cleared, that he wasn't lying. He didn't rape Siobhan. Shelley is so relieved. She tells him that she knew Ramsey wasn't lying. So Munch is obviously still really unsettled. She's like, what's wrong? So he asks her to have a coffee with him so they can keep talking. So she gives her coat to one of her supervisors, and they're walking away together. Executive producer Dick Wolf. We got your boyfriend killed!
I wouldn't quite call that it's not really a Gina Silver, but...
it's like, yeah, I was thinking that too. I'm like, I think the best example of a Gina Silver we have is Honor.
Yeah,
that was definitely a Gina Silver. Yes. Where they were, like, shocked. Yeah, so... we really liked this episode. It was a little bit hilarious.
It was a little bit hilarious, partly thanks to Siobhan Miller, who is played by Jenna Lamia, who I guess is an award-winning, she reads audiobooks, but also she was one of the trashy sisters in The Fighter.
The one that was like, Charlene,
get your ass out here, Charlene. She's not the one that Charlene beats up. She's the youngest sister who's just kind of
in the background
out there going, you skank,
you skank, Charlene.
Fuck you, Charlene, you skank.
So I'm gonna say next week, but next episode,
when we feel like it,
we will be discussing season 2, episode 9, Pixies.
It's really good. I thought we were going to have to wait a long time before we got to it. All right. So, yeah, very excited for next episode. I'm excited to listen to it. I get to just sit there and listen and watch. Yeah. And
empty your lint traps.
Yeah. Empty your lint traps. That can catch fire.
Look both ways when you cross the street.
Yeah. I should give advice, too. Wait, I need to give advice. My advice is always really weird. Don't get drunk and then go get a BLT sandwich at midnight. And if you are going to go do that, make sure that
don't go do that. That sounds awesome.
That's amazing. Why are you always telling people to do cool things?
My favorite was when you told people to charge their crystals in the full moon. I now do that every time.
Oh, yeah. It's how they get their powers back. Got to charge your crystals in the full moon. It was super nice. Bye.
Bye.